Welcome back to the Bulls Beat, Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls. And I think the offseason is probably about wrapped up for Chicago. I probably say that at the end of every podcast, and then some minor move happens that makes me think otherwise. But the Bulls have officially signed Luke Kornet, the Corn Dog, to a 2-year contract. And it looks like that will use up the room exception now, half of it. We have about $2.5 million left, so I guess there's always the possibility of signing someone else. But we don't really have roster spots unless we can make some type of trade or some type of action happening. The fact that Luke was signed now is an indicator to me that the Bulls aren't going to be able to trade Chris Dunn before the season starts. It seemed like they were holding off, hoping they could trade Chris Dunn and then maybe fit Kornet into a trade exception, depending on how the trade worked or some other such type of machination. But it didn't work out that way, so they signed him with a room exception. I think that means Dunn is here. Bulls also agreed to a 1-year deal with Shaq Harrison. I don't know if that deal is one that will allow them to waive him prior to the start of the season to save the money, or if it's guaranteed for a season. But if it is guaranteed for a season, I think that means we're probably going to end up waiving Antonio Blakeney. I know some people think that maybe Shaq would take the place of Chris Dunn, but just for trade purposes, you're not going to do that, because if you need to make a trade at a deadline and you want to send out salary, which is more or less neutral, you can always throw Valentine and Dunn into a trade, and that will just add extra salary. And the Bulls don't really have so many tradable salaries that they would be able to trade if they're trying to add a talent to the team without subtracting a talent, and Chris Dunn would be one of those. Felicio would obviously be the other one, but because he has that extra year, teams probably aren't going to be too excited about that unless we're taking on some type of bad contract or something else ourselves in this deal. So at any rate, I do think Chris Dunn will stick on the roster just because of the flexibility he adds in trades. And the fact that we brought Shaq in, to me, if he's guaranteed and sticks on the roster, means probably Blakeney is out. Personally, I would probably rather keep Blakeney. I know that's probably blasphemy, and no one else thinks you should say that. But I do like the fact that he can hit NBA threes with some consistency. And I just don't really see that what Shaq brings off the bench is so much more useful than what Dunn brings off the bench, unless you just feel Dunn is going to be just tremendously demotivated. But I still think Chris Dunn is a better player than Shaq Harrison. And I just don't see where you're going to get Harrison minutes. So I guess it's fine. Maybe they like him as a practice guy and a hustle guy and a guy that raises the competitive vibe of the room or the practice or will push guys or whatever. That's about all I can get out of that move there. So moving into the rest of the show, I did ask on Twitter for people to send me questions, and I'm going to probably do that regularly, and I'll use your questions on the show as somewhat of a mailbag, especially during the offseason when it's dead and there's not really so much to talk about except to theorize about random pieces of news and information, ideas, and stuff like that. So without further ado, Kevin Mooney asks, what steps are the Bulls taking to prevent injury? And I think this is an interesting question because you had two sets of things that happened in the past, which I think gave the Bulls a really bad look with injury. There was, the Luol Deng thing with the spinal meningitis. There was Tom Thibodeau running players into the ground and ignoring minute limits and things like that. But I think the Bulls have been actually, pretty proactive about resting guys early and often. Probably part of that is because they've been tanking the last 2 years. But they've been using load management on really young guys. And I just think that's maybe becoming either part of the culture or just because they're tanking it was. But I don't think they've been doing anything play-wise that really raises a lot of red flags. The Bulls did have a lot of injuries last year, but you look at Denzel Valentine. This is an old injury he's basically had since high school, and eventually just got surgery on it and is like, all right, now it's going to finally be better. Maybe, maybe not. Probably not. I don't really expect that. But this isn't something where I feel like there was some other path you were going to take with Valentine and things were going to work out great. Lowry has the elbow sprain, which he basically gets by getting his arm stuck. That's just a fluke thing. There's no training thing you're going to do to prevent that. Hutchison fractures a bone in his foot landing wrong. Again, there's nothing you're going to do to prevent that. Carter requires thumb surgery. There's nothing you're going to do to prevent that. Levine probably would not have missed many games at all if the Bulls weren't tanking, but they started resting his knee towards the end of the season, just trying to lose those few extra games. I don't think that was a real injury. Same with some of the stuff happening. God, I can't remember what it was with Chris Dunn. But like, you look at the Bulls' injuries recently, and these aren't injuries of like, wow, guys are pulling up from hamstring sprains and calf sprains and, stuff that's just like seems overuse or playing through fatigue or things like that. So I don't really know that there's a problem here to take care of. Or, I mean, clearly anytime you have injuries, it's a problem for your team. But I don't know that there's anything from a prevention standpoint that you can do to really prevent the types of injuries that happened last year, except to just hope they don't happen this year. And that may not be the answer anyone wants to hear, but I think it's the truthful answer. You know, these aren't types of things that, you know, maybe you could do anything to prevent. So, Felipe, wow, Carveles, I'm going to go with, hopefully I said that right, Felipe. If not, my bad. If this course is maintained, we don't attract any superstars, and the most probable outcome becomes real with a team topping out as a second-round seed, would you keep Garpax for the next cycle? I think this is an interesting question. One, I agree that the most probable outcome, and I'm going to even say most probable best-case outcome, is that, I mean, I think actually the most probable outcome is probably even more of like a first-round exit team. Yeah, maybe they sneak into the second round once. I guess I'll probably say that's reasonable. Would I keep them? I think when it comes to this league, it's generally a results-driven league. And what I mean by that is that the vast majority of owners are going to give a general manager a certain period of time, and if they don't get the results they want, they're going to fire them. And I think to obtain the results you want, ultimately, which is a championship, and maybe some teams are content with contending for a championship or being really good or whatever, but whatever results you feel are adequate enough to keep a set of guys, there's always, in my opinion, a very huge amount of luck involved in doing that. I've spoken about this on the show a lot of times. There's the luck of getting that superstar in the lottery. There's the luck of, you know, being able to align enough assets to pull off a trade. There's a luck to a lot of things around that. And so if your team doesn't get lucky and the context is bad, then you can look at that and say, wow, this guy has really made good moves under the context that they're able to make. And so you could go through the different free agency decisions by different guys, and people say the Bulls have never attracted a big-name free agent, and so they're terrible, and blah, 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 and this obviously means Chicago is awful, and everyone hates Gar Foreman and John Paxson, and I don't really think that that's an accurate way to look at the situation. And the reason I say that is, so in 2010, if we go back and look at the full history, the Bulls actually did get the number one free agent in 2006, which is Ben Wallace, when they had an attractive team, and I don't know how much weight you want to put on that. Probably not much at all, is what you shouldn't. One, it was a very long time ago. And two, it ended up not working out well, but they did get the best guy at that time. You go to 2010 and you look at that scenario, and clearly it was preordained that LeBron, Bosh, and Wade were all going to play together in Miami. It was the only place that they could play together, and they've been planning this for years. I mean, that came out factually afterwards. So, you know, from a reasonable contextual standpoint, you can look at that and say, well, there was no way that we could get these guys. We just couldn't. There was nothing we could do. There was literally nothing we could do to make that happen. It was not a possibility. These guys had planned to do this prior to free agency opening, and no one knew it about it at the time, but it was planned. So now you look at the next tier of guys, and the next three guys were Amari Stoudemire, Carlos Boozer, and Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson stays with Atlanta because they offer him a crap ton of extra money in what was ultimately a pretty bad deal. And no one thought he was going to get that extra money at the time, and he was a borderline max guy. So, you know, you kind of look at that and you say you didn't really have any chance at Joe Johnson either, just because you couldn't offer the money, and Joe clearly wanted the money, and it was clearly the right decision for him to make. And so now you're looking at Amari and Boozer. To me, these were pretty similar guys. They're both guys who could score and rebound and play terrible defense. Amari had a lot of injury issues coming into it. Boozer was maybe known as a little bit lazier. Yeah, the Bulls got one of those two guys. If you want to tell me Amari was much better than Boozer, that's fine. It's your opinion. I don't really think he was. But, you know, whatever. So that season, the Bulls actually convinced Carlos Boozer to come here versus the Nets for less money. He left money on the table to come here. So in 2010, when you look at what they could realistically have done, I think they actually kind of ended up doing okay. Like, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, maybe if you were a huge Amari fan, they could have paid Amari as much as the Knicks and maybe gotten him instead of Boozer, and maybe you'd have been happier with that. I was actually happier with Boozer given the contracts that those two guys got, viewing them as similar players and Boozer being the better deal. And so now you go to the next free agency period. That was probably a period where big names were on the table that the Bulls could bid, and that was when they chased Carmelo Anthony, and Carmelo chose to go back to the Knicks again for a crap ton more money. And so the Bulls couldn't match that, and They didn't. And, he just chose the money over winning and worked out great for us. Thank goodness. I did not really want to get Melo back then anyway. It would have been an interesting last-ditch effort to do something around Rose, but it's pretty easy to see now that would have crashed and burned. And maybe, in my opinion, to some degree, I'm a little more upset that they tried rather than that they failed. But either way, you look at that free agent year, and that's not going to happen. And so now it really brings us up to this past year, which was the last time really there was a big-name free agent available that they had cap room to pursue. I mean, there really just was no one in the Wade and Rondo year, so that just sucks. And so now you look at this year, and they really weren't in a place that was appealing to anyone. And if you look at the places the big name free agents actually landed, Kyrie and Durant went to a team that was okay, but made the playoffs, but had assets to put around them. Kyrie had just gotten off a team full of a bunch of young guys. He wasn't going to go to a team that was rebuilding like Chicago was. And Kevin Durant went to go play with Kyrie. So they didn't really have a chance there, and the reason was their team wasn't good enough. So situationally, they didn't have a chance. And then you look at the Clippers, Kawhi and Paul George both just wanted to play in LA. They're from LA and wanted to go there. And so it's fine. And what I mean by this is not like, oh, wow, it's great. Of course, the Bulls can't do any of these things and the cards just didn't line up. But what I do mean is each of these situations is kind of like just individually different, and it comes down to the individuals. It doesn't come down to just like one set of rules of like, wow, it just didn't work because these guys didn't like Paxton and Foreman. If they loved Paxton and Foreman, they would have gone there. Like the situations that they could have gone were better in other places at these times, or there was like more money, or there, there's just like some overriding factor that the Bulls probably couldn't realistically match that really didn't have anything to do with the management, and so I don't really believe necessarily that that is a limiting factor for us in attracting guys. So when 2021 rolls around and we probably don't get Giannis or whoever else because the situation may not call for it, well, you can say, yeah, these guys just can't get anything done. And, I get it from a results-driven perspective that may be true. And maybe in this case, if the Bulls have won 42 games and they're a playoff team and superstars go to some other team that won 42 games as a playoff team, and it's for the same money and everything else, and there's not like some factor that obviously makes that situation better than the Chicago situation, then that would be the first time that that really happened. And it would also be the time where I'd say, yeah, what's going on with us? Why couldn't we pull this off? But so far, that hasn't really happened yet. There's been pretty logical and obvious reasons why the places people went were better than our place. And, there's times where we could have been the better place, but then there weren't really, the right guys available. So there's a lot of things that go into that mix. And I guess maybe that was a really long, long-winded way of saying, I would judge guys based on, can you make good decisions? Do I feel you'll make better decisions than the next guy? Do I feel that I'm better with you than the next guy in the future? There's just so much luck, and that if you look at things through context, I'm okay with the Bulls sticking with guys where they feel like they're making better decisions than other people in the league, but the context has not worked out well for them yet. And I think that is okay. Now, if someone says, hey, look, these guys have just had a shot for so long, who cares about context? You can't just explain away everything. I could understand that too. I mean, they were a team that would have been a legit title contender for probably, like a near decade had Derrick Rose not torn an ACL though. So I just don't really, like there's so much luck involved. It's like if they had a guy who could have just stayed healthy for 10 years, they had a team that would have, contended. They'd have Jimmy Butler, they'd have had a second star around him. They'd have Nikola Mirotic, would have been a great role player. I mean, they really would have done a great job of keeping a core together, but the injuries just did not allow that to happen. It just is the way it is. So yeah, I'm kind of like, I'm okay if they go because I think they've had a long enough run. But I'm also okay if they stay because I do generally believe that they make pretty good decisions and would be okay with that. So that was long-winded, but that's what we get. Andrew Palazzo asks, what's the likelihood we trade Dunn and or Valentine and the realistic value slash return? I think the chance that we trade them basically comes down to the fact that we are looking to acquire talent at the deadline because we are playing well and we're making a talent push, and most likely we just need to find one more wing or something like that to round out the roster, or we got some injury and we need to round out the roster in some way we can't quite entirely predict right now. I think the chance of that is actually pretty decent that we move both of those guys. And I think if we do move them, the return will basically just be for salary matching purposes. I don't think you're going to get anyone great for these guys. If the Bulls do make such a move, I think you'll see them, you know, trading with a future first and then these guys to match salary or something to try and bring in someone and make something happen. And it wouldn't entirely shock me if that happened, though. It also wouldn't shock me if the Bulls just remain patient. But their value definitely is just as expiring contracts. Maybe you can get second-round picks or something like that for them, but that's really about it. I think for us, the odds of just seeing if they work out and can help us this year with no risk in the long-term salary area, I think is probably higher than the gain we're going to get from a second-rounder, especially since the next time we trade, they'll just say, hey, give us that second-rounder you just got, and we'll say, sure, why not? So yeah, not so excited about trading either of those guys. Ben Flanders asks, are the Bulls better than the Kings? And I am going to go a little bit in depth into this one, similar to how I discussed the last question. And so when looking at these things, my first thought is, let's look at all the teams that are kind of rebuilding and or are young teams. And now I'm going to throw out anyone who is presently quasi in a title competition. And I'm going to leave out teams Detroit, San Antonio, and Miami, and because I feel those teams are kind of older teams where I'd rather have our roster than their rosters anyway, because they're not going to be able to compete and contend with the guys they have, and they're eventually just going to have to rebuild. So they've already kind of hit their apex, in my opinion, and are on the way down, and that includes Miami, who just traded for Jimmy Butler. I just think that, anyway, that's my opinion on those teams. Agree or disagree, I'd rather have our roster going forward now than their rosters, for sure. There's probably some quote-unquote contending teams that even say the same thing, because I think they probably have also hit their apex and are going to be on their way down soon. But at least those are teams that like have a really good chance of getting to the second round or further. And, you know, just that present value of that might be exciting to me. So of the teams left, here are teams that I think the Bulls are clearly in a better situation than. Washington, New York, Cleveland, Charlotte, Minnesota. I'm going to put the Thunder in this boat as well, even though I think the Thunder's position is really interesting because they have so many first-round picks. And depending what they do, they could really make some interesting things happen. They could either just save these picks and use them, but they could also trade for people and just have just a buttload of first-round picks to offer. Like if some type of superstar comes on the market and they want to trade for them, they'd be like, hey, what do you think about 6 first-round picks? Yeah, okay, he's coming to us. You know, so I think they have, you know, maybe some more potential, but the fact is that a lot of those picks don't look like they're going to end up being maybe that great. The ones that have potential to be great are going to come due in like 4 or 5 years. And so if I'm just looking at like the next 4 or 5 years out, it's hard for me to put the Thunder above the Bulls. So I'm going to stick them right now kind of in the Bulls have a better situation than the Thunder, but with the caveat that the Thunder really could potentially do some interesting things. Like they have so much flexibility with their position that interesting things might happen there, but they could also easily just Boston this thing and like hang on to all their assets so long until they end up not really being all that valuable. And now Boston is a team that's probably on the way down for me. And this was like the team that had the most coveted position in the league a few years ago. And I remember saying at the time, I was saying like, I don't know why people think Boston is so great. Like they don't have any real stars and they've got a bunch of picks, but they could easily just have this stuff not turn into anything and, you know, collect all these sort of like average assets and not go anywhere. And I think that's exactly what Boston did. I mean, I think Boston is kind of like the equivalent of the Chicago Bulls right now if they win 42 games this season. And you'd say, wow, they've got all this young talent, but if they don't really have someone who looks like a true superstar, it's like, well, yeah, but this could just, you know, stop growing really fast and then not be all that interesting. And I think that's kind of maybe what happened with the Bulls in many scenarios. So here are teams that are kind of up and coming that I would say the Bulls are probably worse than. And I'm going to list New Orleans just because we sort of feel that Zion is pretty good chance to be a superstar. I think a lot of people think this is the most gifted guy to come into the NBA since LeBron James. I'm actually nowhere near that high on Zion. I think he's clearly the number one pick in this draft. Clearly has a lot of upside. But I have much more concerns about Zion than other people. His shooting form is broke as shit. I think this could guy easily be just like the power forward version of Ben Simmons, who can't hit anything more than like 15 feet from the basket consistently. And you're going to see, you know, a lot of athleticism and other, you know, great things that he can do, but he's going to be limited in terms of becoming a real superstar, just because I have big concerns about how his shot translates to the NBA in the future. And then I'm going to throw Dallas in the situation. I'm not entirely sure that Dallas is better positioned than the Bulls, or if they belong in a toss-up category, which I'm going to talk about next. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. Yeah, I'm not really sure I buy it. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because I think most other people would put them in that category. And so I'm not going to throw my own heavy doubts about these guys, really working out into being a great tandem. I'm not going to give so much weight to my opinion because I think maybe it veers a little bit away from the mainstream opinion by a pretty good amount. But I actually kind of personally think they're in the toss-up category, but it would acknowledge most people would say, yeah, that team's probably a better position than Chicago going forward. They got two guys who look like they could be, real stars playing together, and, that obviously puts them in really great position. And now I'm going to go to the toss-up category, and this actually gets to, Ben, your question, which, sorry, it took so long. It was probably like 5 minutes just to get to what you actually asked. Sacramento, to me, is in the toss-up category. You look at a guy like Harrison Barnes and you compare him to Zach LaVine, and I'm like, well, I'd probably rather take LaVine. And, they've got Marvin Bagley, De'Aaron Fox. I think it's probably a stronger core. Would not argue real strongly. Someone said these guys should be better positioned than the Bulls going forward. But I do think, with the Bulls having more pieces that aren't quite as proven yet in terms of Lowry and Carter and Kobe, the Bulls have more interesting prospects, more total interesting prospects than the Kings do. The Kings have guys who are probably a year ahead. And so we'll see how those things track over time. But to me, it's a toss-up. I'd say maybe Sacramento has a slight edge in that toss-up right now with their guys being a little bit more proven. The Atlanta Hawks, I'm going to throw into the toss-up column as well. This is a team which I think most people would say probably has a brighter future, but I don't know. Really, just it's Collins and Young, and then I don't know if you'd like Reddish or Hunter this year. They definitely have a lot of youth on that team, and a lot of things could go well from them. But to me, these are also all guys who are not proven, and there's no real star there yet. And so maybe Young, you feel, is more of a star potential guy than anyone else the Bulls have. But I don't know that I'm convinced either that he's so much more than like Zach LaVine. He's obviously a lot younger, though, so it's more time to grow and develop. But there's some limitations there, I think, that are pretty obvious. Maybe he's the next Steph Curry. Maybe he's not. If he is, then Atlanta obviously could end up better. Memphis is sort of the opposite end of this. They've got JJJ and they've got Ja Morant. And you could then say, well, look at these prospects. This is a team that's going to be great. But it's a lot less total prospects than the Bulls have, and none of their prospects have proven anything yet. So I would say I'm going to go toss up maybe just out of Ja Morant's potential, but I would say the Bulls probably lead that toss up if I was going to guess. Phoenix is another team that's got a bunch of young talent that hasn't proven anything. I'm going to say the Bulls' young talent is probably better than Phoenix's young talent, but again, you have these guys who could just change radically. Maybe DeAndre Ayton all of a sudden becomes a star and this team looks way better. So from that end, Phoenix, yeah, maybe they are a team that could leap past the Bulls, but a team I'd say probably on the toss-up side, but on the lower end. And then the Orlando Magic, they actually had their playoff team last year, but it's still a younger team, but they're kind of like further along the path. They're like a season further along the path than the Bulls, but I think that they're probably capped out in terms of what they're going to do, and this is a team that's probably not going to make the next step into second-round team. That's just my opinion on what happens with Orlando, and I'd put them roughly in the toss-up category. So that's kind of how I feel about the other building teams. Like I said, there's a group of teams, we'll say Indiana, Miami, San Antonio, Detroit, off the top of my head, there might be one more kind of in that group. Even though these teams are better and maybe a little bit more exciting this year, I'd probably rather have the Bulls roster. And then you've got a group of teams that I feel, like a team like Boston. Would you rather have Boston's roster or the Bulls roster? Like, Boston's going to do something more exciting this year, but like I don't think they're going to go anywhere past. They're like the second round team that's already hit their cap, in my opinion. They're not going to go further than that. So I would not be real excited to be Boston. I think they're kind of stuck now. And, you know, but it's fine. They're a much better team than the Bulls, and the Bulls would be probably happy at this point. If they got to the second round and even could envision getting stuck at the second round, you'd probably be happier than you are now. So maybe a team like them is still a team you prefer. But I think doing my quick math, it left me with 9 teams that I felt I would rather have the Bulls roster than those 9 teams roster. Another 5 teams that I thought was a toss-up, and so it could go either way. And then it leaves, 14 or 15. So it leaves about 15 teams that I would say their present value is just exciting enough that I'd rather have them more than the Bulls, or their future value is more exciting, which means I guess I placed the Bulls roster right now right around in the middle of league of teams I would, you know, want to root for as a fan. Though I will say there's something to be excited about watching a team grow and improve rather than being a team like Boston where you're like, oh, just the second round again. You know, in some ways, you like to watch the team on the rise, even if, you know, the ceiling is still maybe there ultimately. The fact that you're still going up at least deludes you of having hope that maybe this thing will get even better. So the Chillsbury Doughboy, what is the total win prediction? Of course, that's the money question, isn't it? I'm going to go 42 wins or, oh shit, we screwed up this rebuild. And I know that tie, I think the Vegas odds are 30 and a half wins. But here's the thing. The Bulls basically won 22 last year. And so people say, well, you can't expect them to jump 20 wins in a season. I don't. I really don't. You know, but they won 28 games the year before. They purposely played a G League roster for like 50% of the season this year. They had so many injury problems. They had no depth whatsoever. They limited that depth so they could still develop young players while, you know, still being in the hunt for a draft pick. And so I just don't think that 22 is like a very realistic number to start with. If all of their guys were healthy, they would have been much better than 22. They added a ton of depth this year, so they have real NBA players and real NBA talent now besides just the guys that they're trying to develop. And so now I think this is it's a 40-win team, and if it's not a 40-win team, then you've probably screwed up this rebuild. Like, if you don't win 40 this year, then you probably don't really have much. Now, there's a few caveats around that I'll say. You still have Coby White and Wendell Carter Jr., who are guys who maybe another year from now will look much, much better than they do this year. Carter, I think, with his injury, for sure will not have nearly as good a year as he would have if he had been able to practice NBA basketball for the last 7 months and do a lot of things. But the two surgeries and his total downtime, I think it's really going to take a toll on him. And then Coby White, I think just point guards develop slowly in the NBA. And the Bulls already talked about, you know, White maybe taking a little bit longer and maybe not, you know, having as big a role initially and bringing him along slowly. So they'll still have some upside if things don't go super great this year. But if you don't see Zach and Lowry able to lead the team somewhere this year, then those guys probably aren't going to do it in the future either. I will say that much. Tim Redeker discussed why so many people think Lowry has a higher ceiling than Zach. Personally, I think Zach is much more likely to be an all-star. And you know what? I can't argue with that. I can't argue with that at all. I'm with you. I don't know why people think Lowry's potential is like so off the charts. I mean, he's not a guy you can create off the dribble. Not a guy who's adding a whole lot through passing or setting up other guys. He's not a guy who's a plus defender or is doing so much on that side. I get why people think he could be an elite scorer if he just learns to take step back fadeaway threes that are unblockable or whatever. But I don't see it either. I mean, if he becomes a 43% three-point shooter, I think he can be a pretty dynamic offensive player that's hard to guard. But he doesn't have the athleticism or dribble moves to gain you all of the things like, say, a Kevin Durant might. I don't know, maybe he's the next Dirk. But it's just really hard for me to kind of see that. I mean, I guess anything is possible, but I'm not sure why people are so excited about that potential. And then you look at Zach and you're like, wow, this is a guy who's scoring efficiently and in volume and has all the athleticism and has flashed playmaking and ball handling and has improved his defense, even though it's still poor each year in the league. You know, like everything Zach is doing seems to be getting better every year. He seems to really do a nice job of improving in kind of like all areas each year. And I think that'd be really hard to keep up this year. But if he just maintains his scoring the same and just takes care of the ball a little better and plays decent defense, just say average defense, Zach is a monster. I mean, he's just a monster. I mean, like I just think he can become a really good player. And I get why people, you know, sometimes refer to him as empty calories. I forget where I heard that quote, but it's one of those things where yeah, maybe that's true now, but it's not hard to see where he can turn that around. And I don't think it would take all that much improvement, quite honestly, for him to turn that around. And I even think it might be just playing with other real NBA players on this team might have him turn that around. So I'm with you. I think Zach has a higher ceiling than Lowry. And I'm not sure why that opinion is so strong in the opposite direction with so many people. And Gruden, Emin, Carter, the forgotten number 7 pick. No question. But I agree. People don't really seem to talk about Wendell Carter Jr. And I get why. You know, he missed half the season. Probably a guy who didn't seem like he looked like he had elite upside, but did certainly look like this guy is going to be an above average player on both ends of the floor, you know, for a decade. If he can stay healthy, there's really no reason to be concerned about the two issues he had this year. So I think, you know, he should come back healthy. But I do think the lack of development he had this offseason means he's going to have a slow start this year and maybe even just a slow year. It might take us until year 3 to see him really emerge. But I am still pretty high on Carter and think he's someone who's going to be pretty valuable. The one thing you could maybe be a little bit down about him on is that just the center position just doesn't seem super valuable anymore. But Carter strikes me a lot like Porter in that this is a guy who's a very solid, strong two-way player. And those guys have value in making your team a lot better. So hopefully Carter will play well, and hopefully he didn't gain too much weight or anything else just being sidelined for so long this offseason. And finally, I'm going to say, Phil, will Coby White grow a beard to match his hair? I don't know. But boy, I hope so. That would be pretty hilarious if he became the beard with the hair. I don't know. You'd have to come up with some crazy nickname if that happened. I did see someone on Real GM, and I can't remember where I saw it, but I thought it was funny. With the signing of Shaq Harrison today, and the Bulls drafting of Coby White, the Bulls finally have Shaq and Coby. So the whole thing has been completed. Let me just put that out on a memo there. So anyway, that will do it for this edition of the Bulls Beat. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you guys soon.